Hello, and welcome to my hearth. This is Creative Storytelling, and this is a further episode in the series of Be Careful What You Wish For, episode 2. Last time we were talking about the whole Greek idea that everything you did had consequences for your actions, and we were starting to look at the whole origin of the Trojan War and the result of the judgment of Paris when he was choosing who would be the best of the goddesses, and ending up himself with Helen of Troy, who he kidnapped and took off to his own palace of Troy from her home in Greece. And we need to have a little think about what happens next. Now, it's interesting, isn't it, with storytelling? So one of the things that I think is very important is that stories occur and then reoccur. There's nothing new under the sun. And we see elements of different stories coming through the ages, as it were, and them being recognisable in the past. Now, for the Greeks, the story of the Trojan Wars is very, very important, because not only was it about man fighting man, but it's also about how we are, as it were, in the lap of the gods, as we are, as it were, subservient to the will of the gods. And as you can see, from Paris's point of view, he has on his team the goddess of love, Aphrodite, because he chose her in the competition. I don't know whether that's clear. I'll explain that again. Because in the judgment of Paris, when he has to choose which goddess is the best, he chooses the goddess of love because she bribes him. The goddess of love is then on his side. And in the ensuing war, the goddess of love is on the side of the Trojans. And that's very, very important. Now, we all know that love is an extremely strong emotion. You know, love conquers all. Nothing is stronger than love. You cannot legislate against love. You cannot legislate the human heart, as it were. And for the Trojans, they are ruled by love. Okay. So in its simplest form, the Trojan War is a fight between wisdom and love. Or if you want to put it into another construct, another setting, it's a fight between your head and your heart. And everyone knows that, you know, people, that their head can rule their heart, but sometimes it's your heart that wins. And that's one of the basic fights in the human spirit, isn't it? The fight between what you know you should do and what you want. The fight between your head and your heart. And that's the Trojan War. So let's have a little think about what's happening with the Greeks once Helen has gone off and become Helen of Troy and has left Menelaus. Okay. And let's have a little think about the story of Agamemnon in this episode, because he is a prime example of knowing what he should do and then not doing it. I'll say that again. Knowing what he should do and then not doing it. That is a basic storytelling construct. A character knowing what they should do, but then not doing it, and therefore getting themselves into trouble. Now, Agamemnon is Menelaus's brother, and he is the king of all the Greeks. And he lives with his wife, Queen Clytemnestra, and he has children, Iphigenia, Electra, and his son Orestes. Okay. So, as soon as Helen goes, the Greeks have to get together to find an army, to create an army, to go to Troy to get Helen back. And they've got a problem, because, of course, they have to sail to Troy. As far as we know, Troy is somewhere on the coastline of Turkey. People have looked for it and felt that they have found it. And it has been excavated on several occasions by archaeologists. Greece is a way away from it, and they're having to cross the Mediterranean. So they're having to cross the sea. The Greeks are having to cross the sea. And therefore, they have to do a sacrifice to the sea god Poseidon. Now, in this conflict between the goddess of love, Aphrodite, and the goddess of wisdom, Athena, Poseidon says that he will remain neutral. Okay, and that's very, very important, because obviously the Greeks have to sail over Poseidon's domain to get to Troy. Now, what everyone would do in those circumstances is there would be some kind of sacrifice to Poseidon. And normally it would be throwing something overboard from your ship. Sometimes it was flowers, a wreath of some kind. It might have been a gift for Poseidon. They would do that. So they are doing all of the things that the Greeks would do, a kind of sacrifice to Poseidon before they set off on their journey. Yeah. Now, very unusually, when Agamemnon is doing this for his fleet, Poseidon turns up. Now, I don't know about you, but when a god turns up when you're doing something, you really you notice it. And what happens is this. Poseidon says to Agamemnon, "Yeah, I don't just want flowers. I want a human sacrifice. I want you to give me the first person that you see when we have stopped this conversation." Now, what can Agamemnon do? He could say no, but that's silly because he's about to be going on a long voyage. And so he says yes, and he thinks, I will have to decide when I turn round who I'm going to look at as my first person that I see. And of course the gods are playing with him, because just at that moment someone taps him on the shoulder, and being a human he turns round to have a look, and it is his own daughter Iphigenia who has done this. And what can he do? He has to throw her overboard. Now, just to show you the caprice and the whims of the gods, yeah, everybody thinks when he does that, that Iphigenia drowns. But in fact, Poseidon translates her to an island, Aulis, and she goes there and she doesn't know who she is. But from Agamemnon's point of view, he has just sacrificed his own daughter. Not only that, he doesn't have a chance to go home and tell his wife, you know, what has just happened, how Poseidon turned up, you know, and what was he to do. Poseidon sends a wind and the ships are blown on their way to Troy, without there being a chance to stop this particular process happening. So he can't go back and do it. And they sail off to Troy. So poor Agamemnon, you know, he's just killed his daughter. He's gone off to Troy. I won't go into all the quality of the Trojan Wars at the moment, but it's a fascinating story. Suffice it to say, it goes on for 10 years. You know, because the fight between the head and the heart is very equal. The fight between the goddess of love and the goddess of wisdom is very equal. And there are huge qualities that go on in the story. Amazing acts of bravery, tremendous stories of battles and fights and love. Now, when we get to the end of the 10 years, this is the bit that everybody remembers. The Greeks and the Trojans are in a stalemate. One of the Greek captains, Odysseus, has a direct line of contact with Athena, the goddess of wisdom. And she tells him in a dream that the Greeks have to pretend to go away. The Greeks have to pretend to give up and surrender and leave Troy to trick the Trojans, because in all this time the Greeks have not been able to get into the city. And what they do is, what the Greeks do is, they build a very large wooden horse. And the horse is hollow. Now, the reason that it's a horse is for the Trojans, who are land-based people. Horses are very important in their culture. They have a sort of horse god that they worship. So a horse is very important. It's one of the symbols of Troy. So the Greeks build a horse, the wooden horse of Troy, and leave it outside the gates of the city. Inside it's hollow, and there's a small team of men hidden in there. And they sail away, pretending to go. And of course, the Trojans are ecstatic. And they think, right, we're going to bring this horse into the city. It's a sacrifice from the Greeks to show that we have won. And they do that. The Greeks by then have sailed back. It's night time, and landed again. The people, the soldiers, come out of the hollow horse and open the gates of the city. And the Greek army comes in and destroys Troy. Yeah, so that's the whole idea of the wooden horse. Beware of the Greeks bearing gifts. Never look a gift horse in the mouth. All of those strange sayings that are based around horses are going to have an origin always with the wooden horse of Troy. Yeah, and we've got that. Now, remember I said that this is an example of someone who knows what they should do, but they don't do it. And for Agamemnon, Athena tells them that they are to kill everybody in the city. Everybody in the city. Man, woman, child, they are to destroy. And Agamemnon, the king of the Greeks, does not do that. What he does to humiliate the Trojans is he does not kill the queen of Troy, Hecuba, and all her daughters. He keeps them to take them back to Greece as slaves, as it were, in retribution, in revenge for Helen being stolen from Greece and being taken to Troy. And he himself takes Cassandra, one of the daughters. Now, poor Cassandra has been cursed by the gods. She has the gift of being able to see into the future. Now, you'd think that that would be a very good thing. But, of course, everything from the gods is twisted in a certain way. So although she has the gift of being able to see into the future, nobody believes her. Not only that, she can always tell how you're going to die. So, you know, that's not always one of the best things to be hearing from someone at a party. You know, well, let me tell you how you're going to die. But as I say, nobody believes her. The one person that she can't see their own death is, of course, herself. And so Agamemnon is taking her back as his slave, in all manner of the words, to Greece. And what happens to him when he comes back to Greece, we shall talk about in the next episode. So thanks for listening. And if you've liked it, subscribe. And please follow us on creativestorytelling.co.uk. Bye.